Hi, everyone. This is Catherine Adams.
And Elizabeth Wallace. And you're listening to Binary System Podcast number 447. And tonight, we're recapping Welcome to Night Vale number 263, Hysteria Land. We are also going to briefly talk about the Oscar-nominated animated shorts and our thoughts about the winner. And then we're going to do a very brief talk about Beastars episode 7, I believe, in one scene in particular.
Yeah.
So we start out the episode by Cecil explaining the difference between an amusement park and a theme park. And a theme park, of course, has a theme, like, you know, Universal Studios is mostly films and Disney is Disney characters. In this case, the theme of Hysteria Land is amusement, but it's like it's releasing you from amusement somehow. It all gets very, very philosophical at some point, but he just wants to make sure everybody knows this is not an amusement park. It's a theme park with a theme of amusement.
Yeah. That's an important distinction. So we have the Children's Fun Fact Science Quarter, except what he's talking about is the fact that we got in the Children's Sad Fact Science Corner last week. It's about the fish and the stream and everything and how that was so sad because nobody knew that the fish existed. Well, apparently there's new information that make it a fun fact again, and that is that scientists did discover the fish and they discovered the stream, and it's all amazingly wonderful because now that they've discovered it, they can build nice houses on it because science.
Okay, yeah.
Great. That's just great.
So there's an awful lot of really cool rides at the Hysteria Land theme park, and the one that everyone is the most excited about is the Disassociator, which is like the world's tallest and fastest roller coaster, and it was designed by someone named Journey Brown Santel, and she's not a scientist or an engineer. I think she designed the roller coaster on the back of a cocktail napkin or something when she was supposed to be doing work at college, and she won the contest, so they built it, but I think she was like using inches, and they translated that to feet, so it is much higher than she had planned, but everyone is still really excited because it's starting now.
Yeah. I like the two things that Cecil uses to describe it. One is that it is impossibly frightening. And the other thing is it's an exercise in existential severance. And I'm like, yeah, that's probably not going to go well.
Nope.
Okay, if we go from there real quick before the roller coaster really gets going, we go to the advice section. So we've got a dad who's having trouble connecting with his daughter. This is actually in relation to the faceless old woman who secretly lives in your home and how she was talking to somebody about their daughter and about how she was making effigies out of hair. Well, this dad is asking, how can I reconnect with my daughter? And Cecil's saying you have to be open and always ask questions and, among other things, ask if the faceless old woman who secretly lives in your home is making effigies out of hair for her. So Cecil is aware of that kind of thing happening.
And the next person who writes in talks about how he is just getting back into the dating scene because he had a relationship end when he accidentally destroyed an entire universe. And, oh my God, too soon!
Too soon, God.
But anyway, he's met a new person and she's really nice and he's really happy. And Cecil says, that's great.
Oh, God.
And this is like Nazar Azim is the person, I think. And I just oh, my God, if you guys ever want to look that up, trigger warning for the death of an entire universe. That's all one person's fault.
I'm still kind of mad at Night Vale about that one. I mean, it's amazing. I love having a story that just like shocks you that much, but that's popular among the fans to just sit there and be like, oh God, I'm still not over that one.
No. And the last person who writes in is someone who has started a new job and he wants to connect with his coworkers, but he's not really even sure what they do for this job. I mean, it involves a lot of moving crates out into the desert and long drives. And since you're not allowed to talk, how is he going to be able to get, you know, to bond with his coworkers? And Cecil says, podcasts.
I agree. Yes, they should listen to our podcast.
They should listen to our podcast. Yes, that would be a great non-conversation starter, I guess, if you're not allowed to have a conversation about it.
Sure. Okay, so Cecil's gotten word that there seems to be a problem with the new roller coaster. It basically went tick, 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 tick all the way up to the top and then stopped. And then there's a lot of theories about what might have happened. Maybe it actually kept on going. Maybe it never actually left. The prevailing theory, though, is that it's just stuck, and that turns out to be true.
Yeah, I like that. There were a few people who said maybe everybody went to heaven. And a bunch of people said, well, heaven isn't actually real. And then someone says, well, you know, there's this whole Mesopotamian thing that is actually the origin of the Christian idea idea of heaven, I think, and it just all got very meta. But no, it's they were able to zoom in on their cameras and find out that, yeah, it's just stuck.
Yeah. We take a quick break for finance, where Cecil says that due to certain economic conditions, a picture is now only worth 923 words. There are extra birds in the bush, and thoughts are now going, instead of for a penny, for $15. So use that as you will.
Hey, I got some thoughts. I'm going to pay me for my thoughts.
Seriously, $15 a thought? God, I got a lot of thoughts.
Okay, so the CEO of Hysteria Land says that there is no problem with the roller coaster. It is working exactly as designed. You know, getting stuck can be really scary. So you want excitement. You can't handle the excitement. But
oh, God.
Yeah, this is, he's actually, I think, throwing out candy cigarettes to everybody screaming, nostalgia is contagious.
God, okay, so the city council is not buying it, and they want the sheriff's secret police to rescue everybody with the helicopter. Unfortunately, the helicopter's not available because people have used it to go to a wedding in Flagstaff.
Yeah.
So there you go.
And to make things worse, there's a storm coming, so they had to move up the firework display at the end of the day. So they're now going off now. So you've got a roller coaster that's stuck and a firework that is going off right next to the terrified people on the roller coaster, and there is no helicopter available to save everybody. And that storm is on us now. So while everyone panics, we will go to the weather.
And we went to the weather. And pulling back the curtain, we usually listen to these episodes at 125 speed, except when we get to the weather sometimes, we slowed it back down to normal because it was really bouncy and really fun and we were really enjoying it.
Yeah, it was, okay, my notes say slightly melodic hard rock with a kind of morphing electronic sound to the bass beat, which I thought was really cool.
Yes, I had modern pop, cool chords, heavy beat, and a voice like somebody in Top 40, but I have no idea.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was called What You Want From Me by Petrichor Limited. And Petrichor is the smell of rain.
And also the name of a character in the Saga comic book.
Yes, yes, indeed, yes. Okay, so we come back from the weather, and Journey has heard about what's going on, and she actually has a theory. She thinks that if they really did mess up the whole inches to feet thing when they were building the roller coaster, they probably put in the wrong size gears. So she stops on her way at like Target or something to pick up the gears that she'd need for a roller coaster, which... fine. Yeah, she's on her way with the right part.
And she starts to climb up, but she doesn't have a screwdriver, I don't think, in order to help assemble things. But then somebody wearing like slick back hair and a leather jacket says, Mamma Mia, and holds out his switchblade. And she's really happy because she took Italian in school, so she knows what he's saying. But yeah, she uses the switchblade to get the wrong gear out and put the right gear in. And it starts going click. Click, 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 and then it goes and it just absolutely completes the whole circuit with the loop-de-loops and everything like that, and everyone gets down there and they're fine. And Journey is still thousands of feet up in the air.
Yes. So she's thinking about, I mean, it was really hard to climb all that way up in the rain and the fireworks and everything. And suddenly she hears this roaring next to her, and it's a helicopter with the sheriff's secret police logo on the side that says definitely not a cop. And they want to know if she knows the way to Flagstaff, and she says she'll show them the way. So she gets rescued too.
Yeah, and Cecil says that he really hopes that she has access to an open bar and is able to have lots and lots of fun.
Yes.
So, yes, because everybody, of course, was wearing formal wear inside the helicopter as they're looking for directions. So, like, that sounds like the start of a joke. But,
it really kind of does. Yeah, yeah.
So, all's well that ends well, sounds like.
I like how he specifically mentioned the electric slide. For people who can't dance, the electric slide is amazing.
Yes, yes. If you are ever in like a work event or something or a work party and you know how to do electric slide, please go in and drag in the person who does not know how to do the electric slide but wants to, you know, join in, because somebody did that for me and it was amazing.
Oh my God, that Cupid shuffle. Ah, I love the Cupid shuffle. And that was it. That was the end of the episode. All's well that ends well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now we're going to jump really briefly into the Oscar-nominated animated shorts, and we just found out today, or yesterday, excuse me, at the time of this recording, that the winner was In the Shadow of the Cypress, I believe is the name.
Yep, it was the Iranian one, I think.
Yes, yes, it was, and that, I think, we were talking about this before the podcast, that it, for us, it was a little bit of a toss-up between Magical Candies or The Shadow of the Cypress. I thought Magical Candies was more Pixar-like of the two. And so I actually had thought that that one would get it. But in the Shadow of the Cypress, it's about like mental illness and PTSD. and sort of like a whale kind of as a stand-in for her trying to care for her father, even though she feels like it's like a losing battle and everything. I love the animation style.
Oh, it was really great. And of course, she starts out by, it looks like she's just going to leave because she's been trying to take care of her father, and he's at the stage of PTSD where he gets so agitated that he'll actually be headbutting mirrors, and he slaps her when she tries to give him some of his medication. She starts to leave, and then a whale beaches itself on their beach, and he doesn't know how to help, and she is just doing everything she can. She tries to dig a channel around the whale. She like puts wet cloths on top of it. She's trying to scare away the seagulls that are pecking at it and everything. And meanwhile, he's in his rickety boat off, you know, the coast, whatever. And then just watching her moving heaven and earth to try to save this whale, he manages to get a rope tighter on the whale's fins, back fins, and then he scuttles his ship, and the ship falling, you know, sinking, drags the whale back out into the water. And I thought for a second that it was saying that, like, oh, nobody can save you from PTSD. Only you can make the decision to save yourself. But it's like, but it was him seeing the lengths that she was trying to go because she cared that made him do that. And I guess, I don't know, if you want to drag the metaphor out, the ship was like the rut that he's gotten himself in, that he's just not going to leave. He's just going to keep isolating himself and keep not taking his medication and keep trying to not get better because it's easier than trying to face things. And it's just like a very oddly triumphant ending to that, I thought.
Oh, yeah. Just spoiler warnings in case you want to watch it. But yeah, he has real trouble getting the whale like free from the rope, and it's going to drag them both down. And you think for a minute, maybe that's going to happen because he drops the knife and he's not able to get the rope off and everything. And then you see her sitting in the rowboat trying to see if maybe he made it. And she hears a splashing noise, and you see her sort of like paddling the boat over. And then we have a view from under the water of her boat going towards him, and he's up on the surface. We don't know if he's okay or not, but what we do see is the whale goes swimming past at that moment. And it's just like, oh, it was so neat. I really liked that. So yeah, it's like Catherine had mentioned, I think last week, that there weren't really a lot of shorts this year that reached the levels that some of them have reached in the past. Oh my God. It's 95 senses, by the way, not 99 senses.
That's interesting. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And at the same time, though, I thought that one was really good. And I did enjoy Magical Candies, though it was sillier, for sure.
It was sillier, but sweeter. I mean, candies. But yeah, just like the first candy that he, magic candy that he finds, lets him talk to the sofa. The second one lets him talk to his dog. And this is the one where Nathan and I were watching this in the theater together. And we're just like, oh no, the dog's going to die. The dog's fine.
Dog's fine. Just totally fine.
This idea that the kid thought maybe the dog didn't like him anymore, but the dog was just like, I'm old. I just want to sit and rest and sleep and not, you know, like have to drag myself all over the place. It doesn't mean I don't like you anymore, which is great.
I was glad you gave me that warning, because the dog at one point is just like, you can go out and play. Don't worry about me. I was like, oh, wait. Obviously, the dog's fine. Dog's totally fine. But I thought the sweetest moment in the entire episode was definitely his dad comes home and has been just ordering him around. It's like on him and do your homework and brush your teeth and sit up straight and all this kind of stuff. And the kid is like in bed, just kind of like, oh God, I wish he would just stop riding me so hard. And so out of spite, even though his dad told him to go to bed, he takes another one of the candies. And you realize all the candies look like the thing that it's going to let him talk with. This one was like spiky somehow. He hears this sound, and you see these characters, kanji, kind of like floating through the air, and it gets sort of louder and louder, and it's his dad is washing dishes, and the sounds are coming from him, and he's just, without any words, he's saying, I love you, kiddo. I love you. I love you so much. And you're just like, oh, my heart. Oh, it's so good.
So good. I think the funniest moment, though, was the next candy he tries is bubble gum, and he blows a bubble, and it floats outside while he's doing his homework. And then he's sitting there at the table still doing the homework, and the bubble comes floating back in, and he looks over, and when he sees it, he does this like full body flinch, like, it's really hysterical. But it's the voice of his grandmother for some reason. And he's just like getting to hear her just chatting and talking and everything. And he saves a little piece of it so that he can talk to his grandmother whenever. But
oh man, the prettiest one out of all of them was definitely the one where he takes it and he hears these sounds. And he sees things floating through the air and they're saying goodbye, see you later, so long, so long. And he goes into a park and it's all the fall leaves coming down from the tree. And it's this beautiful moment where all the leaves just surround him and they're all just cheerfully saying bye, see you later. You know, oh, it's so pretty.
And then he sees this other kid standing there looking at him. And he's got, I think he's got a lacrosse something or other while, you know, the main characters had a skateboard. And he just looks at him. And this whole time, he's never really had any friends. And he hasn't anyone to talk to. And nobody ever comes talk to him. So he looks at this kid and he takes out the last candy and it's clear. And he puts it and he tastes it. And it's like, it doesn't have any flavor. I guess that means it's up to me. And he looks at the kid and says, do you want to play with me? The kid's like, sure. And it's just, oh, it was so wonderful. That, I think, could have made it into the Oscar winner. I think just that one moment of like, yeah, you want friends? Why don't you ask them?
Yeah,
it's really hard to do. But I was just, it was so sweet.
It was really sweet. Now, Wade's favorite by a country mile of all the entries was one called Wander to Wonder.
Oh, and it's about, my.
Oh, my goodness. So you've got this guy. He's obviously a puppeteer on like an old show. But it turns out, though, that his little puppet people are actually little teeny tiny people wearing costumes. You don't find that out immediately. What you do see, though, is you see the camera kind of changes at one point, and there's a dead body lying on the ground. The puppeteer died, and all of the little puppet people are trapped in the house, and they're slowly starving to death and going crazy. It is fucking dark, man.
It's really, really dark. I mean, the animation is great. It's all claymation. And I read a little interview with the woman who did this animation. It's like one of the things that stood out to me was that they wanted to work really small just to like get the right feel to it. But she said the problem was their little eyelids would just like pop off like fleas. So at the end of the day, they'd have to be getting down on the ground, just sweeping up all these little eyelids everywhere. But it's just,
God. It's
very dark. And, you know, that obviously they're going to starve to death maybe. And then everything catches on fire. And the next thing you see is they manage to survive by hiding out in the oven.
Oh, God. And then there's like, they kill a pigeon. And it's just, it's really bizarre and really dark and definitely funny in places. But even watching it, I was like, yeah, this is Wade's favorite. He likes it dark. He really does.
And I think that one may have had more of a chance, except it didn't really have a message like in the Shadow of the Cypress or Magic Candies. I don't know that there was something you could distill down into like a pithy saying.
Yeah.
So I think that's what a lot of times the Oscar people are looking for.
Not only that, but a lot of times it tends to go to the ones that are more family friendly. I mean, not always. Windshield Wiper won a few years ago, and I wouldn't call that family friendly, but most of the time it's like, what is it? The boy, the horse, the fox, and the something or other.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
It's like treacle. So much treacle. Oh my God.
And now the one Yuck was the French one, I think. And that was about little kids discovering people kissing and a couple of them realizing that they might actually like to try it and having to overcome this whole yuck idea, both in themselves and in all their friends who want to tease them about it. And it's very cute. It's fine.
It was extremely well done. But at the same time, I was thinking, I've seen animation like this similar on TV shows. You know, there wasn't anything that really grabbed me. I did think it was very sweet. And also, just as an American, hearing the French language is very neat.
You know,
it's just a beautiful, beautiful language. But now the last one was the one that I would definitely put at the end. And it's not that it wasn't technically well done. It definitely was. But it was called, I think, Beautiful Men.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about four...
Sorry, I meant three.
Middle-aged white guys who are going to a hair transplant center. And in the end, they all get their hair transplants. And I'm like, I'm not sure exactly. I mean, in this case, I know who it was speaking to, but I think that's the thing about the Oscar. It has to speak to a slightly wider audience, I think.
Yeah, and it was definitely a whole idea about men having to face their own insecurities, even though you would think that like going out and getting hair plugs is not really facing your insecurities. It's trying to work around them so you don't have to be insecure about that, but it doesn't really cure the whole problem of being insecure. So it was technically really well done. I mean, the expressions and everything was great, but that was the one where the lights come up and everyone's like, okay.
Yeah, that was the final one. They ended with that one. I was like, not a high watermark to end it on, but that's okay. I mean,
I feel like Wander to Wonder would have been a better one to end with, because of course that one, spoilers, ends with you know, the shed that they're in has burnt and now there's a big hole there. And once they manage to kill the pigeon that was menacing them, you just see the female character just standing there and like feeling the sun on her face and the breeze and the idea that they're out. And then the lights could have come up and we could all left and felt like
yes,
rather uplifted rather than a little confused.
Yes. Yeah, pretty dark way to end it though. My goodness, that one was weird. All right. So that was it for the Oscars. Like we said, the winner was In the Shadow of the Cypress, and I think it was very well deserved.
I cannot tell you what I think about any of the other winners because I haven't seen any of them.
No. I mean, I saw Dune 2, and that was, I think, out of all the other movies, that was the only one I saw. I know that your friend David really liked The Brutalist.
He really did. Yes. And I've heard a lot of good things about Conclave as well. That's got the one with Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah. Need to. I'll catch up on some of them eventually, sort of. Except I'm not going to watch the Oscar-nominated documentary shorts. I usually try to watch them just because it's an easy category to knock out. But there were two of them about music, one about police shooting, one about a Parkland shooting survivor, and the other about a guy on death row. And I was like, I just really can't do that right now. Sorry.
It's hard to sign yourself up for more grim stuff when there's so much grim stuff going on right now.
Yeah. I want to say the one that won was about the first woman to play in the Philharmonic Orchestra, which is a pretty cool thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So real briefly, we want to discuss Beastars final season, episode 7. We could go into a lot of detail about Juno not being able to catch a break or how Haru is pissed off at Legoshi because he's hesitant to kiss her and everything. But we really have one specific scene we just want to talk about. Spoiler warnings and possibly trigger warnings for some really frank discussions about death.
Yeah. Okay. So Haru, I think she wants to, I don't know if she's decided that the fear of death or the possibility of death with Legoshi is what she's after, or if she's trying to overcome that, but she cannot get him to commit to her physically. So she insists what she wants to do that day is she wants to go to the black market, which of course terrifies Legoshi, but she's insistent, and he like pulls her a sweatshirt over her head so people can't see that she's a rabbit. I think she's a little freaked out, but also curious, and then almost gets menaced by a jackal who, I think when Legoshi walks up and he's like, you can't walk away from me, and the jackal recognizes a higher form of carnivore and leaves her alone. And she insists on going into the stand that's labeled rabbit, which would be black market where the rabbits would be for sale. So she goes in there. I was expecting to be freaked out about some headless, skinless rabbit corpses hanging up. No, that's not what you see. You see a glass case with a line of rabbits in there, but they've got their fur on, they've got clothes on, and they're all lying there tucked up into fetal position so you can see their little feet and their toes and everything. And it is one of the most disturbing things this show has done.
I couldn't believe it. I mean, I could not have possibly been more shocked when I saw that. Like, literally, if we had seen, like, the corpses and the meat and carving away at something, that would have been disturbing. But the little rabbit people all lying on their side, almost looking like they're sleeping, except they're dead, you know? It is like, I was just like, my notes just say, yikes and a half, you know? It's just,
it's one of those things that makes, because I admit that you cannot look too closely at the metaphors sometimes or at the workings of a society, because you'll probably come up with some reason why this could never have happened. But that right there, I don't understand how you can have a carnivore and herbivore society when you have, it's so obvious that these are people and you would be buying them and cooking them for dinner, and they're like your coworkers or your classmates or the person that you exchange highs with when you go to pick up your mail the next morning. It's just that right there. I don't understand how somebody could do that and then still live in a society where what they eat for meat is there as people. And
Yeah, also, I mean, the whole idea of a black market is usually supposed to be kind of like illicit and everything. Apparently, everybody knows about this. It stays in one place. It's fairly well frequented. And this guy, this is like a brick and mortar store that he's got going up. So the whole like devouring thing being a terrible thing for carnivores and everything. Well, apparently there's no police keeping track of any of this.
I think when they, with the crime of devouring, that means non-consensually eating somebody or eating somebody that was alive. Because what Lugosi's been convicted of is a devouring incident, even though he was told that it was fine that he could eat Lewis's leg.
Yeah.
Whatever. But yeah, so it definitely, I think they said that the animals in the black market that are sold are like from morgues or hospitals or something like that. So they're not supposed to be going down and hunting down your neighbors, but there's no way to know unless somebody turns in a missing persons report. So it's just, yeah, it's just weird. And then of course, Haru makes it even more weird because she wants Lugosi to kiss her right there in front of these rabbit corpses, and he can't do it. And she turns to the storekeeper and she like takes off her hood and says, "How much would you say that I'm worth? Because I want him to buy me." And I'm like, "Haru, what are you doing? Yeah. None of this is healthy."
No, it's really, really, it's super, super not. You know, I have a thing in my notes. I really liked how they animated her face during that when she grumps her way out of the store and everything. It's extremely mobile. Now, in a couple scenes, Louis is talking to this cat-like woman because he needs something to be analyzed. And that was an example of like where the B team takes over the animation. Mm-hmm. You can definitely tell. But the scene with Haru, I mean, it was just stunningly animated. And plus, you're just sitting here every time it turns back to look at those rabbit corpses. You're just like, I don't buy that it's all coming from morgues and hospitals, by the way. Ever since I first heard that, I was like, there's no way. There's absolutely no way. They're definitely lifting people off the street.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that they need to have the black market to have some kind of outlet for animals that need to eat meat every once in a while. But I'm like, historically, I don't know that that's worked really well to have like an entire section devoted to letting people do illegal things with this idea that they'll just get it out of their system that way. It's like, no, if they normalize it there, they're probably going to find it easier to normalize it everywhere else.
I mean, this is, I just, oh, she was really shocking. It's very, very shocking.
Oh, God.
Props to the animators and the designers and everything. I mean, they just figured a way to just have a very simple image with the most disturbing quality to it. It was amazing.
This was not an accident. They were not trying to make something look serene or normal in any way. They were definitely pushing our buttons on this particular one.
God, yes. And yeah, that's all we really wanted to talk about. I mean, Juno is in love with Louis, and he's told her that he has a fiance, and she doesn't believe it. And she's telling Lugosi that she is definitely going to, like, her power as a carnivore. She's going to make him feel things he's never felt before. That's another of my yikes moment. I mean, she's talking about how she's gaining weight because every time she thinks about Louis, she eats stuff because he makes her hungry. I'm like, dear Lord.
Oh, wow. That was a pretty epic meltdown that she had, just like wailing in the middle of the noodle shop.
Gracious. Okay, so that's it for B-Stars. Now, you had mentioned a store that you had stopped by this week.
Yes, it was something Nathan had seen an Instagram reel for. Do you remember Ed McKay's, the bookstore in Greensboro?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Well, apparently that was owned by a married couple, and I think they got divorced. And I'm fairly sure the wife got access to the McKay name. So she started this store called McKay's, which is pretty much what Ed McKay's was, only more so. It's like a used media store, and it has absolutely everything. We went to the one in Mebane, North Carolina, on the way to the western part of the state on Friday, and then we went to the Winston-Salem version today, and it's got like all the books. All of the books you could want, and a row of puzzles, and a row of Funko Pops, and a row of board games, and then records, and CDs, and DVDs, and musical instruments. It's just a massively wonderful warehouse of a place. And I got...
Oh, I love it.
I'll tell you what. I got four The Wicked and the Divine graphic novels for $29. And we're talking like new graphic novels.
Wow.
So it's just like, you can find what you want there. And apparently, they started this whole thing with the idea of trying to make education more available to everybody by making sure that they could just like get you any book that you wanted for less than what the big bookstores were, because they had access to used stuff. So, and it's impressive, this whole place. So I would definitely recommend that.
Nice. It makes me want to go see it. There's a place here in town called Book Off, and that's where I've brought old DVDs to before, because they'll give you some money for them. You can also bring books, but you'll get like 10 cents a book, unfortunately. It is huge, and yet it's interesting that for all that they have in there, it's never quite the selection that I'm looking for. So I've had, like I said, had a lot of good luck bringing DVDs. You can at least get a couple bucks for each DVD that you bring in, sometimes even more, especially if it's an anime that they really want. But yeah, it sounds like McKay's is definitely more of what I'm looking for.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit of a consolation thing because we haven't been able to get to the Shamblin Book Mine in years and years because we don't drive down to Florida anymore, and that's in Jacksonville.
Oh boy,
if you have a chance to take a look at that place, that is just so epic. And that's mostly books.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a city of books. It's something you would see in a fantasy novel.
Oh, man, I hit that place for the first time right in the middle of my solid Instagram addiction. It is so Instagrammable. It's just, my God, it's so pretty with all of the books. It's great.
Nathan still laughs about that because it took him a while to find us after we went in there when we were all ready to go. And then he's buying stuff at the counter and he turns around and we're like gone because you had spotted some spot like around a corner that had a nice curving wall of books and he's just like, I can't believe it. They were just here.
Yeah, it's dangerous to bring us into a bookstore like that. Man, you're going to lose track of us real fast.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I guess that will wrap us up for the week. So make sure to check out pixelatygeek.com for all the book reviews, the movie reviews, the comic book reviews, the photo galleries. And we're inching our way up towards WonderCon. It is the end of this month, but we're not quite there yet, but we will definitely have a lot of photos for that. And then Hugh, of course, always has his movie reviews up, and he's still our most forgiving movie reviewer that we've ever had, I think. So if he says he hates something, you really need to avoid it.
You really do. God,
wow.
That's rare.
Yeah. All that and more at pixelatygeek.com. So I guess we'll probably catch up on another Beastars for next time.
Yep. And I did finally watch the season premiere of season 3 of Star Trek Lower Decks.
Nice.
And that was very fun. So I may watch a couple more episodes of that.
Yes. When I've been working on projects, I have been rewatching Peaky Blinders. Apparently, there is still going to be a movie at some point to wrap everything up.
One day, I guess. Mm. God.
But we'll talk about that or whatever else distracts us. So one way or the other, we will talk to everybody in 1 week.
Talk to y'all later.
Yeah, that was her jumping off of something, I don't know, and then she leaps to her cat tree and starts scratching. I'm like, are you going to behave? Are you going to behave? Cricket, seriously, stop. Okay, and recording. And cat, seriously, go away. Go away.